on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
I've seen the arguments online. This is my blood, sweat, and tears. There is no way I'm going to give this away for free. Well, you may not have a career.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome. It's The Self-Publishing Show with James Blatch.
And Mark Dawson.
From the dreary grey UK. So we should have been in Florida last week. You realise that. Did you see all those posts coming up from our previous years? Your memory of last year and the year before being on the beach. And yes, we have missed. We've missed Nink. It's been a tough for Nink because I don't think that many people went, but they did quite a lot virtually as well. So now we would be back from the beach in Florida, but looking forward to California, to Nevada and Vegas in November, but not doing that either. Not doing that either. COVID has struck. In fact, today it's even struck POTUS, and FLOTUS is the day we're recording this. So it's getting real. Stuff's getting real. Right, enough of that. That's here to stay for a bit. And the upshot of it is that we've mentioned before, although, you know, personal and distressing circumstances can occur during the pandemic, of course, but generally for the online industries, it's been very good. And certainly we've seen evidence that publishing, self-publishing in particular, has done well with people having more time to read, being at home. So that's been good. So definitely a good time to focus on your careers, which is what this podcast is all about. And we're talking today to a romance author called Richard Mui, who I think from memory is down in California. I think he's San Diego, actually. And Rich is, you're a bit nervous about saying this, but he himself talks about being a man in a woman's world, really. He's a male romance author.
I'm not nervous about saying it. I put a context there. As we had our Slack channel, people throwing out ideas for the title, and it was a little bit sexist, which isn't surprising from Alan. So I managed to choose a slightly less sexist title, which is what you'll see in this on this podcast. But no, he's a man writing romance. That's fine. It's not necessarily a woman's world.
And it's a really
Women
good
can write all kinds of books.
He's a really great guy. I'm full of admiration for the way that he's built his author career up, and a great listen coming up in a few minutes. First of all, would like to welcome Jill Temple is our new Patreon supporter this week. Thank you very much indeed, Jill, for joining us. She went to patreon.com/self-publishing show. We should say, Mark, that there are just a few days left if you would like to enroll in Self-Publishing 101, the foundation course to set up your self-publishing career. It opens for new students a couple of times a year. This will be the last time in 2020. It will open at some point in 2021, 6 months' time or so.
If we're still here.
If we're all, if the world hasn't disappeared. If 21's got to be a better year than 20, surely. Yes. So if you're thinking about it, now is the time. And if you go to selfpublishingformula.com/101. And Mark, yeah, we had a really good couple of posts from people in the groups this week on this subject, did we not?
We did. This was completely unsolicited, and it was posted in the Mastery group, which is the group that goes along with the Ads for Authors course. So an author, James will read out in a minute, but she posted, she's had lots of success, but just with 101, hasn't actually used ads yet, which makes me think potentially we have another high six-figure, seven-figure author ready to hit the big time. So probably get an idea if you read that post, James, because I said, we didn't know this was coming. I saw it weirdly enough, as I was drafting an email to go out during 101's launch period, thinking it would be nice to get a fresh testimonial. Then, as if by magic, this comment popped up.
Well, I've just screen grabbed it, so we'll put it up on the screen as well. So yes, and Nancy Scanlon, and she posted yesterday on the 1st of October. So this happened last month, and it wouldn't have if it weren't for the SPF 101 course. Thank you to Mark Dawson and his team. So the rest of us are just thrown in by Nancy's minions. And his team, the minions. That's fine. I'm almost ready to dive into ads. So before she's even dived into ads, and there is her book report screen grab, $11,137.74 between the 1st of September and the 30th of September. So I'm assuming her first five-figure month. Her books look great.
I think it's romance. I think it's time travel romance. They're very nice covers. And I think there's only four. I have a feeling she's only got four books. So that's, I mean, a fantastic result. She had a book bub in there as well, but you know, that's not going to account for $10,000 worth of sales, but it certainly helps. So yeah, it was lovely to see that. And you know, without kind of adding the ads on. So as I've mentioned before, the way I look at 101 is the launch pad, and then ads is the fuel. And she's done this without actually fueling her rocket, which is really, really impressive. So, you know, well done to Nancy. I'm delighted to see that.
Yeah, fantastic. She's knuckled down and really, really implemented 101. And to have that kind of platform ahead of running paid ads is very exciting for her. Very excited for her. Keep an eye on Nancy. And I've had a couple of private emails from people, unusually actually, students on our course saying, I've been noticing this guy. So I've had two of those in the last couple of weeks saying, just watch this guy because he's suddenly taking off, one man, one woman. And so we will keep an eye on those as well. People really hitting the seam, the sort of oil spurt, whatever analogy you want to use. Good. So selfpublishingformula.com/101 until Wednesday night. What I normally do, secretly keep it open for a day or two afterwards for people who miss the actual deadline on the at midnight on Wednesday. But it will then shut up shop until deep into 2021. Good. Okay, Mark, we are going to move on, I think, to our interview. So Rich Amui, I had a chat with him just a few weeks ago. As I say, I think he's down there in Southern California, a man writing romance and doing really, really well.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Okay, Richard Mui, welcome to The Self-Publishing Show. Lovely to have you with us. I think you are my second interviewee from San Diego in the space of 3 weeks, so which is making me jealous because it's that time of year where we're starting to get a little bit grey here, and I always think about that Southern California sunshine that you must bathe in most of the time.
Yes, it's very nice. Thanks for having me, by the way. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's our pleasure. So we're going to talk self-publishing. We're going to talk about your career. How would you describe your books? Whimsy, romantic, romantic comedy?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely romantic comedy. That's on the quirky side. I have some characters that are a little more quirky and sometimes a little crazy, close to over the top in some cases, but it's your typical romantic comedy.
And you've done pretty well, we should say. There's a spoiler alert to the story that we're going to tell here, is that you've done pretty well.
I'm doing very, very well. But as you know, in publishing, there's always another level.
Of course there is. And we have names for all those levels if you want to get the T-shirt at some point. Okay, well, let's start with a bit of backstory. So how long have you been writing, and when did the self-publishing episodes begin?
I started writing, I'm actually kind of a late bloomer. I started in my 50s, and I'm 58 now. And I started, my wife encouraged me to get into writing. She was already doing a little bit of writing. She encouraged me to take some creative writing classes at Stanford University, and I decided to go for it. And in one of those classes, I was writing short stories, and one of those short stories that she read, she absolutely loved and said, you have to turn this into a full-length novel. And I did. That ended up being my first novel.
Was writing around for you before then? I mean, what triggered it?
No, actually, it wasn't. It wasn't ever on my radar to go into another career as an author, as a writer. It just kind of happened. My wife was doing it, and I said, you know what? That would be kind of cool if I got into that. I have this love, this obsession for romantic comedies. Why not give it a shot and do something that I think I would love it, because I love romantic comedies, so why not write them?
And were you reading a lot of romantic comedies? Because they're a great genre for both books and films, aren't they?
Actually, at the time, I was not reading a lot of them. I was more into the movies. So pretty much every romantic comedy ever shown in the cinema since the mid, late 1980s, I've seen probably more than a few times. And that's where my connection came. And it wasn't until later that I kind of dove into the fiction side and trying to create something on my own.
Okay, so you started writing, you did your course at Stanford, developed the short story into a novel. And in the romantic comedy genre, the novels are typically 75 to 100,000 words. Was it something like that?
I think it's a little bit shorter, not close to 100,000. Probably a lot of them are between 70 and 85,000.
Okay.
There are some that are shorter and some that are longer, but I guess it just depends on the author. A lot of authors have their sweet spots when it comes to output. But yeah, you're in the ballpark. My last three novels were between 75 and 85,000 words.
Okay. So your short story you set out to do, well, you did on the Stanford course and developed into a novel. Was this a story that you thought at that stage you were writing for an audience, or were you classically, as we say, writing it for yourself at that point?
I thought that it could have an audience, but I was writing from inside of me because it's something that I love so much. So I was just writing, as they say, something that I would like to read myself. And that's the approach I took. Fun, quirky characters, happy ending. Pretty much that's what I was going for. And it was a lot of fun writing it. And it was something that appealed to me. After I wrote it, I said, hey, that's pretty cool.
Good. That's always a good feeling. And at that point, mm-hmm. So you finish your book, and were you thinking self-publishing from the beginning, or were you looking around for a traditional deal at that point?
I was always thinking self-publishing from the very beginning. In fact, before I even published the first book, I did a lot of research, probably about a year to a year and a half of research on publishing, particularly self-publishing, and trying to figure out my game plan for when I was going to dive into it and get started. And this is something you may get a kick out of. Way back in the beginning, before I even published, I was still researching so much before my first published book. Hired Joanna Penn in a private consultation to pick her brain. And I think at the time I paid her like $150 or $200 for 1 hour just to pick her brain as much as I could about and try to form a game plan to get into publishing. And it was well worth the money because at that time I didn't know a lot of people. There weren't a lot of people talking about self-publishing at that time, but she was. So I decided to hire her. She helped me with the game plan, actually, that set the wheels in motion and my career.
What year was this, Rich?
I've been a published author. I just celebrated my sixth anniversary for publishing. So this was probably about 8 years ago, approximately.
Okay. Okay, so that was in its infancy. I imagine Joanna's fee's gone up, even if she still does that sort of thing.
Yeah,
who knows
if she even does it anymore, but if she does, I'm sure they have gone up. But it's funny because at that time, she mentioned this thing to me that I could use to kind of help launch my career and get the ball rolling. And I had no idea what it was. It was this weird thing called BookBub. And I was like, what is BookBub? I said, okay. I wrote it down, and she sent me some notes later with a link and some different things. And she basically told me, among a whole bunch of things, to publish the first book. Don't spend too much money and time and effort marketing that first book. Wait until you get the second book out and then go for a BookBub. Give the first book away for free, then those people who you hook will go on to your second book and you'll have a newsletter and they can sign up for your newsletter. So that's exactly what I did. I waited until my second book came out. I applied for a BookBub. It took me like two or three times to get it. I got it. I gave away 50,000 copies of my first book. From there, people went on to the second book. I got newsletter signups. And that's what really got it all started. And then I just repeated the process more than a few times.
Wow. I mean, that was the way it was working then. It still does work extremely well for some people. Some people moved away from a little bit. But quite a jump a lot of people struggled with giving a book away for free and still do struggle with that idea. But for you saw that commercial sense straight away.
Oh, absolutely. And I still believe in it 100%. And I've seen the arguments online. This is my blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. There is no way I'm going to give this away for free. Well, you may not have a career. So your blood, sweat, and tears will stay with you in your pocket with few readers. And that's okay. But there is a reason why many of the biggest companies in the world give away millions and millions and millions of dollars of their product, because they think they're going to hook you with those cookies and then you're going to keep buying the cookies.
Yeah.
And I believe in it. I still do book bubs all the time. And the other argument that I've heard is that book bub is too expensive. And this always makes me laugh, because I think, well, first of all, it's the price you have to pay if you want to get some readers. And you don't look at the actual cost of the book bub. You look at what you're going to get out of it, not just the price.
Of course.
I always thought that was kind of odd to me, that they don't look at the big picture and what you're getting out of it. It's just the price.
Yeah, it's a very commercial mindset, which isn't naturally native to people in terms of when they are starting out as authors rather than business people, but a really, really important change of mindset, which you illustrate there. And I've talked about this quite a lot recently. I had my first book bub on the books that we market through our imprint, and seeing that spike and then the slow rise up in page reads that followed for 3 or 4 weeks afterwards. No question that it paid itself several times over. So, and you've got six books. In this case, we've got six book series. So you presumably wrote your first couple. Were they standalone books in the same universe, or were they serials or series?
All of my books are standalones. I'm working on number 17 right now.
Wow.
And that's funny, because back in the day when I did consult with Joanna Penn, I did sit in on a couple of other panels from some big publishers in New York. They were among the big five, and they had this big phone call where you could go in and pay, and you can sit and you can ask them questions and stuff. Part of my research, and that was one of the pieces of research. I got two things that I got as advice that I ignored. One was to write in series, because people buy in series. If you want to have the best chance of having any type of a career, write in series, because once you hook them with the first book, they'll go on through the entire series. Janet Ivanovich has, 26 books in her one series that just keeps going and going and going. And so I thought about it, but then I thought to myself, you know, when I go to the movies, I like to watch a movie that is fun, that has comedy, that has a happy ending, and then I'm done with the characters and I want to see something completely different. And that was my approach to writing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with writing in series, because there are most romance authors write in series and they do very well, the ones who have been able to break out to the next level because they wrote in series. I will also say that, could I have been at a higher level or maybe sold more books if I wrote in series? Probably, but that didn't change my mind. I've always wanted to do standalones, and I have no interest in writing series at this time. The other piece of advice that I got was to not use my real name, because women would not buy romance from a man. Hmm. So that I needed to come up with a female pen name. And that was another thing that I ignored, because I love romantic comedy so much. I wanted to be connected to them with who I am, me, Rich Amui. I wanted people to know and see my love for the genre. So if I used a fake name, I was thinking, I don't like that.
Yeah.
So I decided to ignore that advice as well.
Good. So New York doesn't have all the answers, as we've probably worked out, and the way things are changing.
I think I think, as you know, when it comes to like listening to your show or anybody who has some great advice, not everything is going to work for you.
Sure.
So you take what you can use. If you're really dead set on doing something, you know, unless you're thinking of something that is obviously not very smart, you're thinking, you know what, I'm going to publish this book and I'm not going to have a cover for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's probably not thinking properly, but there are some things that you have to take what works for you.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of examples of where similar strategies have worked very differently for people. And that's definitely something you need to bear in mind. There's not one size fits all. It's understanding the landscape, understanding the options, understanding the system, getting the basics right. And then there's a little bit of working out what's going to work for you. It might be Facebook ads for you, might be Amazon ads, might be a combination of the two. But it's strange how some authors, for them, one of them works, the other one just doesn't. And it's
very strange. I've seen them countless times, and it really makes no sense, but
there it is. Okay, so your book, you say 17 you're up to.
I'm working on 17.
You're working on 17 now. But I'm assuming, despite them not being in a series, despite ignoring New York's advice, you get read-through results here. You have readers who will plow through your series because they love your writing.
Yeah, I'm fortunate that whether it's one book or another, because people don't always start with the same book when they read one of my books for the first time. They stumble upon a certain book for some particular reason. Somebody was talking about it. And it could have been my fourth book. It could have been my 10th or my 15th book. And yeah, that's the thing. You hook them, even with standalones, if they love it enough, they're going to go on and find some other books.
Yeah. I love your covers, by the way. In fact, funny enough, I did an interview this morning with a British author who does cozy mystery. Very similar, the cartoon type character seems very in vogue. It's very appealing. And I think in your particular books, Rich spells it out very nicely, the kind of comedy, quirky, but with a romantic element there, which is no doubt. And that's such an important thing that your cover needs at a glance to say what your book is. And I think yours do a great job of that.
Yeah, thank you. My cover artist, she's actually in the UK, Sue Trainor, and she is amazing. She's done almost all of my covers, and she does an amazing job. She's a wonderful artist, does it all by hand, and I absolutely love them, and I think it's an important part of my branding.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've had these covers from the beginning?
Yeah, since the very first one. That was part of my research. Looking at other, I always wanted to do illustrated covers. And so that was part of my research of going online on Amazon and just looking, finding as many illustrated covers I could find, then looking inside the book and seeing if they thanked the cover artist who it was, then going online and finding that person and seeing other work that they've done. And that's how I found Sue.
And you've written a book called Coffee, Tea, or Me. And I seem to remember in my youth, bearing in mind I was born in 1967, that there was a large doorstep dog-eared airport bought copy of a book called Coffee, Tea, or Me, which is like Pan Am era air stewardesses. And I always remember looking at that thinking, I wonder what point my mother or father read that book. So I could never quite imagine them. It was that era where they didn't really discuss those sort of things.
But I get an occasional email every now and then, and they say that there was a book called Coffee, Tea, or Me in the 60s or 70s, and it was about flight attendants or something like that. Don't know much about it, but
no, it's hilarious. I think it was a book that was just of that moment there, just as the 60s, swinging 60s started to permeate into more mainstream sort of Sex and the City type thing before that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's just something I noticed. Okay, look, that's your background. Let's talk a bit about your marketing and where you are now. And also I want to talk about writing. So in terms of marketing, when did you start sort of, you began with your giveaway, your chat with Joanne, your second book out, started to give away the first one, started to build up a newsletter. And was that a slow process for you at the beginning?
Are you talking about the building of the newsletter?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was slow at the beginning. I was building it organically. And at that time, I only had the newsletter sign up in the back of my books. I didn't even have it on. Well, I did have a newsletter sign up on my website, but one thing I did later was I did add a reader magnet, and that helped significantly to increase the signups on the newsletter. But for a while there, I had that reader magnet only in the back of my book. So I was offering it to only to people who have read one of my books. And that has changed since then. Now I have it on my website, out in the open for everybody, because I figure if they took the time to go to my website, they must know something about me and they're not just looking for a freebie. There are the freebie grabbers, sure, and that's okay, but they'll be weeded out soon and eventually will unsubscribe and that everything will be fine.
And did your original, when you first uploaded, did those books sell with in those early days, or did you have to put some paid advertising in to get them going?
As I said, I did take Joanna's advice at the beginning. So after I published my first book, I didn't really spend any money getting it out there. I already had a website. I had an author website up probably a year before I even published my first book. And at that time, I already had some newsletter signups before my first book even came out, because I was looking for groups online to be a part of and get, and of course, my mom and my sister and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
Anybody that you can get on your list to start, just so you can actually practice and send out some newsletters and get a feel for it and feel comfortable sending out newsletters. So that was the beginning, and it was a slow, organic process. I wasn't getting a whole bunch of newsletter signups in the beginning, before the first book, but before my second book came out. I mean, maybe I got one a month or one every 6 weeks or something. I don't remember exactly. It wasn't until I started promoting the second book, got the book bub, and really got myself on the map, so to speak, that where the newsletter signups started coming in. They still weren't coming in huge, but they were coming in much better at that time.
And in terms of sales, when did that start? Tell us about how that has obviously got to where it is today.
Sales at the beginning were, I think, slow, like for most people. You're just trying to get your books seen because they're invisible. And you know, at that time, Amazon advertising wasn't available at that time, so you didn't really have a lot of outlets to get your books in front of eyeballs for people to buy them. So, you know, honestly, I don't remember a lot that I did at that time. Pretty much, I was on Facebook and I was trying to go for BookBub as much as I could, but there wasn't a whole bunch of other things at that time, marketing channels.
Were you running Facebook ads?
At the beginning, no, I wasn't at that time, and I don't even recall if they even had a way to boost the post at that time. I don't All even right. remember.
But so on the back of the, you had a book bub early on the back of that, you were selling books. What were you doing? A few hundred dollars a month or not that, or?
I think I was doing more than that. I think people went on to the second book and most of my books are at $3.99. So I was definitely selling a few at that time. With my second book, it wasn't enough to say, hey, I'm a full-time author and I'm making bank right now. It wasn't at that level, but I was actually making some money. And that's when it really hit me that, you know what? There's a market for these romantic comedies. There really is. And even though I'm a man working in a woman's world, when it comes to romance, there I saw a light at the end of the tunnel. I saw, hey, wait a minute. This can really happen. And that's when I kind of even picked up the pace and started writing it faster.
So it was enough for you to see that there was a future here. And what were the breakthrough moments then, Rich, to get you to where you are at the moment?
I had a couple of breakthroughs. I think the first breakthrough would be actually just getting that first book, Bub, and getting myself seen somewhere out there where people would sign up for my newsletter and buy the second book. But I think my first big breakthrough was with my third book, Kissing Frogs. And that was after another book, Bub. And it was another, you know, back then, and keep in mind the category of BookBub that I've always been in is chick lit, because they don't have a category for romantic comedy, and they have never given me a BookBub for the contemporary romance category, which is, it's pretty big. So they always gave me chick lit, and in many ways chick lit is kind of like romantic comedy. So I was perfectly happy with it. I thrilled actually to get that. But back then, I could, that was when even some of the smaller categories of BookBub could do very, very well. Chick Lit wasn't one of their biggest categories. Still, it's not. I think it's their 20th or 25th category in terms of size. But wow. Still, with my third book, I had the number one free book in the world.
Wow.
After that BookBub, I gave away, I think it was also around 50,000 copies. I did stack some other promos at that time because more promos were coming around, were available. And wow. That's really when the numbers started going up. And then I would say after that, the next milestone that I hit where they went up even further was when Amazon ads were available for independent self-published authors, when they weren't before. I jumped on that right away. And, you know, when I got that email, I was already setting up ads the exact same day because I knew I had to jump on it quick because everybody was going to do it. And those click costs were going to go up. So I jumped on it as fast as I could. And I think that little wave there lasted maybe about 6 months before there were just too many people jumping on it. And then the return was starting to slow down and go down lower and lower. But I jumped on it early when I had the chance.
And what's working for you now? What are you running at the moment?
Right now, I'm just running Facebook ads. I do an occasional Amazon ad, but the romantic comedy category is huge on Amazon. To give you an example of how big it is, my breakthrough book, the one that has sold more than anything, was actually my 14th book. It's called It's Not PMS, It's You. And that book made it up to, I think it was around number 320 in the paid store. And it was in the 300s there for, I don't know, maybe a month, 6 weeks. And it was under 500 for a while. It was doing really well. But with that being said, being in the 300s in Amazon in paid books, in my subcategory of romantic comedies, my book only made it up to number 35.
Wow. Wow.
So you can see how competitive yes. that category is.
With some big sellers.
Big, big sellers. And then the same thing, since my romantic comedies are considered also contemporary romances, in that category, it was the same thing. I mean, barely crack the top 50, even though it was number 300 and something in the store. Lots of competition in the category.
And can you give us a hint at where you are in terms of earnings at the moment?
I'm a mid-lister. I don't know what the window is for being a mid-lister, but I think I'm in that window. I consider myself to be doing pretty well. And pay the mortgage and other things. So I'm doing well. But like I said earlier, there is another level, and I would like to, you know, see my books reach a bigger audience, because still with the success that I've had so far, there are still millions and millions and millions of people who have no idea who I am and who is this guy writing romance.
Yeah. And let's just talk for a moment about being a guy writing romance, particularly these sort of books. And you mentioned It's Not PMS, It's You. Am I right in thinking that PMS is premenstrual? syndrome. Yeah, because in the UK, it's premenstrual tension, make sure that I've got the right thing. So that is quite a female area and quite a female thing to say to each other as well. So you are really right in the heart of female territory here and clearly thriving in it. I mean, that's quite something, I think.
Yeah, and there was a, you know, before I published that book and I talked about it online in a couple of author groups and showed the cover and they said, wow, you've got some serious balls writing a story like that from a woman's point of view about a touchy subject because, you know, women do not want to hear a man saying, is it that time of the month? Or is it, you know, you're playing with fire when you mention anything like that. So I wanted to do something that came to the defense of women because I believe not only everywhere you look, I don't think, you know, you look at some men who just don't treat women properly. And I wanted to do something. I wanted to stick it to the men. It was what I wanted to do. The men who think like that, who think that they are superior over women, I wanted to stick it to them. But I had to do it with humor, obviously, because I write it with romantic comedy. So, yeah, I mean, I guess when you look at that, I'm going into a territory that's not normal for a man. But the response has been overwhelming. It's been my best-selling book. And I still have women who write to me emails or messages on Facebook to say, this was the funniest book, and it really hits home. You nailed it on the head. I even had a review that it's one of my favorite reviews. A woman who said, "I finally found the unicorn, a male romance writer who knows how to write a female properly," or something like that. Yeah. I don't know the exact word, and that was a big, huge compliment to hear something like that because. I put a lot of work into making sure the female point of view is accurate, and I have women read it before it goes live, and it's very important to me.
Well, it reflects well on your own sensitivities as a man, Rich.
Well, thank you. I don't know how to respond to that, but I love everybody, and I think everybody is equal, and that's the way it should be, and I reflect that also in my writing.
Yeah, well, they look great. Okay, let's talk a bit about the writing before we let you go. So in terms of your process, do you sit down and have a good idea of what's going to be in the book? Do you plot? Is basically what I'm asking. Do you plot or do you just write ahead?
I have to plot or I would be bald right now because when I was doing the short stories in the classes at Stanford, I did no plotting at all. I wrote about 25 short stories during one of the classes and absolutely no plot. And I did well, actually, because the stories were maybe 3,000 to 6,000 words. They did have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And for some reason, I was able to do that. Now, with 75,000 words or 85,000 words, I tried that and I couldn't do it. My head was going to explode. I had to have some sort of a plot. Didn't have to be a deep plot at all. And I still don't do deep plots. Sometimes when I talk about when I do my outlining and talk about a particular chapter, sometimes it's just 3 or 4 sentences that's going to explain what's going to happen in that chapter. And that's all I have for the outline. And that's enough to get me going. But I do need something like that for every book going forward, something that's going to happen in every chapter, the conflict, the tension, the ups and downs, everything all the way to the happy ending.
And in terms of writing, do you have a particular time of day and a particular process?
I prefer to get started immediately in the morning. Walk the dog. I've had my coffee. I'd like to sit down and actually just get started. It doesn't always happen that way, but I prefer to start immediately. In fact, right now I try to eliminate my distractions. So I have something that blocks my social media. So I can't go onto Facebook or get sucked into Twitter and then just focus on my words. But even right now, with all of the negativity in the world and all the drama and all the doom and gloom, I'm writing love and laughter and humor. I have to write comedy in the middle of that. So what I'm doing now, and it's not easy to stay focused with all this stuff going around us. So what I do sometimes, every few days, I block social media for 3 days.
Right.
Because I really have to focus. For me to have this, the humor come out of me and get it onto the page, if I have these distractions about things going on, it just kind of just eats at my creativity. So I have an app on my computer. I don't go on social media very much on my phone. It's pretty much on my laptop. I have an app that will block social media for 72 hours so I can get some words in. Then I'll go jump in, take a peek at some things, do a post, and then block it for another 72 hours.
That sounds like an excellent thing to do for our own mental health anyway, just to block out the craziness for a few days and just remember, you know, your family and, you know, what's important and real.
It's actually helped. And it's not only helped with my writing, but just in my everyday life, because you can really just get up in your head about all the things that are going on and what you would tell this person if you had them in front of you. And so many things mental are jumping back and forth in your head 1,000 times a day. But if you can get out of that and just block it and focus on what you need to get done and get it done early, then later on in the day or in a day or two, you can get back to the drama.
Yeah. Not very conducive, all that stuff, to the texture and feel of your books, I can tell straight away. So I completely understand that. And do you have a word count? So targets for each day? Or?
If I'm in the zone and I'm writing well, I'd like to have a word count of 2,500 words per day. Honestly, especially in the last 6 months, like a lot of authors, it's not happening. It's just, it's like I said, you got to be focused and you really, really just have to stay with it. But that's a comfortable level for me where I feel if I get 2,500 words in a day, I feel very, very productive. I feel good about the book moving forward and getting to my goal of publishing the book. If I get under that, if I get 1,000 or 1,500, still not bad. I'm happy with that, but I do have this in the back of my head. Yeah, if only I didn't, you know, do that 3 hours of gardening and pull those weeds in the backyard, or if I, you know, but you have to have balance in your life. Yeah. You have to go out and enjoy things. We love the beach. We need to go to the beach regularly, walk, put our feet in the sand, walk in the water, get in and swim, and not think about anything else but being there in that moment on the beach and enjoying life. So it's very important.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I don't think it's particularly healthy to have that kind of, I'd call it almost a Catholic guilt, lives with you the whole time of when you're not working, feeling slightly guilty that you should be. I wish I could get rid of that. I've spoken to Mark about that before. It kind of invades your head when you're in the cinema trying to enjoy a film or, as you say, at the beach. There's a trick to enjoying the moment and knowing that that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's very, very important to have that balance in your life. And I think that plays a part in my writing, because if I didn't have the balance, if I didn't have time to just go with my wife to the beach for a few hours or go for a walk or for us to sit at home and watch romantic comedy movies or Hallmark movies and just kick back and do nothing at all, if I didn't have that balance, I think it would show in my stories.
Yeah. So do you see your stories as, classically as a form of escapism for people to lose themselves in and smile?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I just did a post about my 6-year anniversary of writing romantic comedies. And I got that from a lot of people. They say, thank you so much. We need your story so bad. People who read books want that escape in general. But I think when it comes to romantic comedies, it's almost like it's taking it to another level, because you have laughter involved, and laughter is a form of medicine. Mm-hmm. It produces so many different chemicals in the body, and it's necessary, especially in times like these where people are just stuck at home or they don't know what the future holds. Laughter is the key in so many ways. And so I'm grateful that I'm able to provide that joy and laughter to people for them to escape for a little bit. And it helps me escape as well.
Yeah. Well, who knows what people are going through and what they gain yeah. from losing themselves in one of your books. Laughter and love. Can't go wrong, Rich.
No, it's a very, very good combination. For the most part, most people want it. Most people need it. So I'm definitely working in a genre that I love, and to know that I'm actually helping people escape and enjoy something like that, it makes it even better for me.
And you want to take it to the next level. So do you have any specific routes at the moment that you want to explore?
I mean, when it comes to my output, I still want to keep doing what I'm doing. I want to put out a couple of books a year. If I can get it back up. There were a couple of years that I had three in a year. I would like to get it back to three books in a year if I can, but that takes a lot of focus and determination. I'm really just working hard while still finding that balance there. So like I said, having the balance, I don't want to eliminate things that I love in my life to get that. I want to have the balance. So I want to keep doing what I'm doing and continue to grow and get my books to as many readers as possible. And, you know, I would like to one day be the first man ever to have the number one romantic comedy book in the world. So we'll see when that happens.
Yeah.
You notice I didn't say we'll see if that happens. I said we'll see when it happens. You got to have the right frame of mind.
I like that positivity. And you let us know when that happens, because that'll be a big moment we'll celebrate with you. Well, Rich, it's been fantastic talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time. I can't help noticing that you've got quite a resemblance to Matthew McConaughey, particularly in one or two of your photographs on your Amazon page. I think it's striking, and that's, he's a...
Thank you. I appreciate it, because some people say I look like John Turturro, and I think I prefer the Matthew McConaughey a little bit better.
Yeah.
Not that John Turturro is a bad guy. He, speaking of quirky characters, there's somebody for you right there, but...
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Hey, no, you're welcome. Stay in touch, Rich. Let us know how you get on, and we'll see you when you get the elevator up to that next level.
Thank you, and thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on the program.
This is the Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There you go. What a lovely man Rich was. And obviously, you know, you can always tell with the loyalty of the readers. So Rich talked about his relationship with his readers. They are a very loyal crowd. It's often the case, I think, with romance, perhaps more than other genres. Maybe something to do with the subject matter is very sort of emotional and intimate, and people feel close to the authors. So we talked about Lucy Score, who's an absolute star in our area, and Lucy, I think, has a fantastic mailing list of people who adore her and her writing. And Rich is clearly building something on a similar vein, which is great. And yes, he is a man writing romance, which of course there are. We had men on here who write romance before, but they are without question in the minority. In the same way, Mark, I'm guessing females are probably in the minority of thriller writers.
I guess so. I don't know. That would just be speculation, but yeah. I suppose it probably is true. But, you know, who knows? But, no, it's lovely to see Rich doing so well. And just it goes to show, if you want to, it doesn't really matter what you want to write. The market is there. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, what gender you are. You can find a genre that will, if you can find that intersection between what you want to write and what your readers want, then you can do really well. And he's a prime example of that.
Yeah, good for Rich. Good. Yes, I mean, there's lots of famous, very good female thriller writers, more so than I would say male romance writers, who do exist, but there aren't hugely prominent ones. I can think of people like Karen Slaughter and Suzanne, who's the British author of the TV series, I've forgotten now, Widows and so on. Who do I mean? Linda LaPlante.
We'll let you swing there for a little bit. No, there's plenty. Sarah Paretsky. Yeah. I could write down 20 probably. There's plenty. So there isn't. I think that's a false distinction to make. Numbers would probably back you up in some cases, but there's no. You can write whatever you want.
Yes.
And should.
Absolutely, you should. Thank you very much for those wise words, mate. Good. That's it. We have a book.
So James's erotica. he's not writing about aeroplanes anymore. He's writing about other things. Let's move on before we embarrass ourselves.
There's a little bit more love in book two than there was in book one, which was a barren.
I look forward to that.
A barren landscape for romance. Good, yes. Look, we have chosen our next book lab targets, victim, I should say. So that's coming up. I love those episodes. And next week, we're going to be devoting the episode to nonfiction, particularly using your book as a kind of calling card and vice versa, and using the book itself as a revenue generator, whereas your main thing you've got might be something else. Consultation, I think, is one of the... We've got two interviews. Consultation is one of them, and public speaking, the sort of conference keynote speaking is the other one. So we're going to look at both of those. And I think there'll be stuff in there without question that applies to fictional authors as well, so don't skip it if you're a fiction author. I know lots of you listen very loyally every week anyway. Good, that's it. That all remains for me to say is it's a goodbye from him.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com. Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with the Self-Publishing Show.